time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Hey, did you ever have a high school teacher or a college professor? You could see that they were so knowledgeable. They were great at giving facts, but they just really couldn't relate it to you. And probably in a matter of minutes, you would be snoozing away. And you realize that they had something to offer, but they just, I mean, it wasn't the stories behind. And the opposite of that, and the example I can give you is, in college, again, one of my degrees, environmental science, my professor in wolf ecology, well, he had lived it out there. So when he would walk into class and his lectures would begin, he'd be talking about things firsthand and he would make it come alive. And I think, quite honestly, it doesn't matter at what age level, from elementary school straight through graduate school, education should be alive. Today, I'm going to give you my title is Ecology 101, and hopefully I can make it become alive to you because, you know, it's not just a definition. It is, okay, what's the story behind it? What makes it relevant to me? And I think that's important. And I'm sure you also know this. When you have teachers and you could see that they are just loving doing what they're doing, if you were the outsider looking in, and then you'd see the students also loving doing what that teacher's doing because it is now alive. So I'm going to give you a couple eco terms. And then besides the terms, then I'm going to tell you a few different stories because we're going to be talking today about how ecosystems change. You know, and they can change naturally or by man's intervention. And I'm going to relate to you a number of both sides of this as we go through it today. This show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. We're going to talk about that term succession today, so ecological succession. And by definition, that's the gradual change from one community of organisms to another. And you go, okay, so what's this gradual change? Well, you know what? It's one thing to be sitting in a class, but it's another thing to be out there in the wild. My example is this. Growing up, family farm, I've been the farm boy my whole life. To this day, still get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. Don't have to. As a matter of fact, today, didn't have to get up and head over to the podcast studio. But I'm up at 4:30 this morning, cup of coffee, some breakfast, newspaper. I'm starting the day that way. And now, growing up on the farm, I'd be the first one out the door. I'd grab most times my bow and arrow or my fishing rod. And by the way, with my bow and arrow, I was more giving animals exercise than anything. It's just a way to get out there. That's all it was. But I would see certain places, and going back to the change succession, the gradual change. I would be in a meadow, and all of a sudden, when I say all of a sudden, I'm talking about over years of time, all of a sudden you would begin to see the meadow begin to change where you'd have some larger shrubs inside of it. And then you'd have some understory trees like a smaller birch, etc. And throughout all the years of me hiking in a specific area, I would actually see succession happening. And you would see it going from one ecosystem to another. You would actually see it changing to a woodland, changing to a wooded area, and that's it. So my tracking and stalking of animals, and I always say the word stalking, and right away humans go, what do you mean stalking? Well, out in the wild, the way that Native Americans do, you stalk animals the same way that animals stalk each other, and that's just part of it. Well, going back to that gradual change from one community to another, we can go all the way back to the Lenni Lenape Indians. Lenni Lenape Indians, Northeast, they actually wanted to have deer to hunt, or a greater population of deer. So there was great woodlands many moons ago. And what they did was this. They slash and burned a lot of the woods, burnt them down so that they could get meadows. So they changed the ecological succession. So this wasn't a gradual change. But once they had that meadow, then they wanted to maintain it because larger, you know, open areas, grasslands, more deer population. So they actually, by changing succession with a burning, they were actually able to get a greater population of deer inside there. And that was whitetail deer, by the way, because there's many types of, many species of deer in our country. Now, just my change, man's intervention. Growing up, and we would fish, my cousin Jimmy Toots, Donnie B, and myself. Well, there's Donnie B and there's Joey B. Well, we would be fishing out in the Muskie River, the Muskinecong River, and we'd be fishing there, and there was this one favorite stretch we would go to, and we would go there year after year, actually, you know, probably week after week, and we'd just sort of be living there, just the, you know, the part of your youth that you would just love, straight on into our teens. And years later, my Aunt Julia, she had passed away, and we're going to go to her funeral out there, and the path of the cars in a funeral procession is going to go right along the Muskinecong River, and I had not been there in years. So I am now all excited to go back and see the great muskie that, you know, we had fished for so many years. And as we're going to this one stretch, which was my favorite stretch, all of a sudden I see townhouses on both sides of the Muskinecong River. And I see in townhouses, and now I know that man's intervention had changed the succession of what would happen along there. And you know something, this is a, you know, obviously makes sense. This is a permanent change. It could be something as simple as the pristine river is now changed because someone's oil from their car, antifreeze from the car, whatever it is, has now leached, you know, through and is now into the river. The litter that was there, all these different things. So we need to be aware of both sides of this, you know, how things happen out in nature, and how, you know, the changes that man makes in this one here. So going along in our ecology 101, let's go to a term called primary succession. And this is succession that begins in a place that does not have soil. And you go, all right, so where would there be a place that doesn't have soil? So let's go to a simple place that you all would understand. Let's go to the side of a volcano. Now, when a volcano erupts, it cools to make rock. Sometimes it depends on the type of volcano, whether it's an explosive or quiet, but sometimes it will actually cough out. And I always use that word cough out because towards the end of the eruption, many times explosive volcanoes will cough out some volcanic ash. So ash is, you know, the first beginnings of a soil that might be there. But then you get natural processes coming in. So now all of a sudden you've got a little bit of rain being blown through. So we've got some moisture there. You may have some soil. You know, you talk about hurricanes and things. It's amazing because we've had, believe it or not, we've had insect problems in different parts of the world where insects have actually been blown via hurricanes to different parts of the world. So soil gets blown there. Seeds get blown there. But then as we get animals are there, and I'm going to go specifically on this one with birds. And birds will do one of two things. Well, bird scat is actually called guano. That's their le poo-poo, yes. And sometimes a bird will eat a seed and not totally digest the seed and be flying somewhere. And when he scats it up, you go, well, that sounds gross. Well, guess what? Now you have the seed packaged in fertilizer. And there it is. So if it lands on a place where there may have been some soil that got mixed in with some of the volcanic ash, and now all of a sudden, primary succession. It's a place that there wasn't any soil, and all of a sudden we get plants. And it's funny that one plant brings a different, it might be an insect, and so on. And this is how, when you hear the word succession, this is how things bang, 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 bang. This is how they continue to grow from there. And you know what? When you look at places, and I'll just use the Hawaiian Islands. Well, one island is going to give way to another island. And I don't mean in the sense of the volcano, but I'm talking about in the sense of the primary succession, because now all of a sudden something had happened. One, a bird may pick up that seed and bring it to another island. And this is how things go. Now, when we go to a pioneer community on that, it's the first community of organisms to move into a new environment. And you know what? These plants are usually hardy plants, and this makes sense. If you didn't have something hardy somewhere, it's going to die off. And I'll give you a good example of a plant, I'll call it a plant group. How about this plant group called halophytes? And halophytes are salt-loving plants. Well, it makes sense then these plants would have adapted to living near the sea. So if I get a halophyte plant on an island, and obviously we think about islands, and by the way, there are freshwater islands, and I know that out in the Great Lakes and all this, because I've actually, with my wolf research, oh my goodness, one of the wolves swam out to an island that we were tracking. He had a radio collar on, and I was on the field investigation team, so I had to paddle out in my canoe to get out there to see what the wolf was doing. And I know I'm going to digress it, but this story is well worth it. I am paddling back and forth a few scientists in a canoe from mainland to the island gear. And I am now coming back to pick up some more gear. And this is not an exaggeration. I was in a canoe. There was zero wind. And I'm on the Great Lakes. I was on Lake Michigan. And it's like there was zero wind. And all of a sudden, and this is out of nowhere, I'm sitting in the back of the canoe just paddling because there's no wind at all. And all of a sudden, a wind comes up and blows, and it spins my canoe 360. I spun in a circle and, like, petrified. And I don't get afraid too often in the wild. And then the winds began to howl, and they went from zero to, like, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. And I am now in a canoe by myself in a Great Lake. It's probably, like, 500-600 feet deep. And I quickly slide myself to the center of the canoe, bed down, so to speak, to get there, to get back to the mainland, to probably clean out my shorts at that point in time, because it was a pretty harrowing experience. But talking about this, well, just to give you the idea that there are freshwater islands. Hey, remember I told you, it is most important to learn through stories. And, you know, I guess I'm pretty good at stories because that's sort of how I get through life. So we've got those halophytes, not on this island, but the ones near seawater, which is you would probably call saltwater, ocean water, near seawater. So we have plants that have adapted there. So when we get a pioneer community, the first organisms, and they happen to be plants, well, they're going to be the halophytes, because something that's not salt-loving, hey, guess what? You're not going to make it near seawater somewhere, and that makes sense. Now, watch how crazy this one is. I'm going to give you a plant that started in the Aleutian Islands. So the Jeopardy question today is, where are the Aleutian Islands? And I ask this question often, and I get some really cool answers. They are all those tiny little islands that make that little comma shape off of Alaska. Well, think about this. The meadow rose, Rosa multiflora, for you botanists out there, started there and has made its way because it happens to be a hardy plant. So remember, hardy plants are great pioneer community plants. It has made its way from Alaska. You can now find it all up and down the East Coast. And then there is a species of the meadow rose that is a halophyte. It is a salt-loving one. You see it. It's got larger leaves on it. It's got larger seed pods on it. So it has adapted to be there as a pioneer community plant. So in our Eco 101, as we move along, we get from pioneer community primary succession, we go to secondary succession. And this is succession that begins in an area that already has soil and was once the home of living organisms. So we're talking about a place that, hey, there's life going on. So what would be a cool change that would be there? And I'm going to give you an example of a plant and one of their adaptations, which I think is, when you talk about nature, and you go, all right, so what is so cool about this? Well, how about the lodgepole pine? And we find the lodgepole pine, and I'll give you the region of Yellowstone National Park in that area, Montana. I was going to say Montana, Wyoming together, so that must be White Tana. Anyway, but the lodgepole pine has a cone called a serotonous cone, and watch how cool this is. Think about how this is. Pine cone falls down, and it is closed. Well, sooner or later, most pine cones, will they open up? These pine cones don't open. They just stay there until there is a fire. When there is a forest fire, after the fire is over, so you've got hundreds of degrees, the ground is actually hundreds of degrees. That is why lots of burrowing animals during a fire actually die, because they will head into their burrows. And as they head into their burrows, they're cooked alive down there because the ground is so warm. Well, these serotonous cones stay closed. And then as the ground cools, the cones then pop open, the seeds come out, and the regrowth, you get a secondary succession going on, a regrowth of an area that was, and think about this, most of the area was populated, but the serotonous cones, they really work. Now, when I was doing my grizzly bear research right outside of Yellowstone National Park, I was in the Bear Tooth Mountains. That makes sense. Do your research in the Bear Tooth Mountains on bears. So I'm there. But when I was done, I went down into Yellowstone, and I was there after a time when close to 1 million acres of Yellowstone. It was a year before a huge forest fire had occurred there. And there were areas that were just burnt out. So I'm taking these photos and click, click, and it looks like just these huge just wooden sticks is burnt and sticking up, and there was some of the old lodgepole pines. And then you look on the forest floor, and you've got one-year-old lodgepole pines growing, and that was from the serotonous cones, and they're up. And I came back the next year. I used to call Yellowstone my playland because I've done a lot of research either with grizzly bears right there. When I was finished my wolf research, I'd zip over there. And then I was doing some plant research in Idaho on the sagebrush steppe, really unique area. And I'll give you a cool show on sagebrush steppe one day. You want to talk about the ecology of a unique area. How about a desert at 9,000 feet up in the Rocky Mountains? Anyway, I would be in Idaho. And all these places, most times, were like an hour and a half from Yellowstone. So every year, I just go back to Yellowstone. So I watched the succession of those lodgepole pines. And now when I go back there, some of these pines are sort of, they're big. I mean, I've done this for years upon years. So you get a chance to take a look at, like, you know, what's happening as things continue to succeed. And then you get some understory plants, some blueberries, et cetera. So you watch this succession, how it occurs. And this is a place that had soil. Well, so if it had soil, there's nutrients there. So there is a great place for things to regrow, or there is a great place for things to, you know, make their way succeed, you know, disperse their way into it. And the other thing with forest fires, with the serotonous cones, there's only two places on Earth, and they happen to be in the east, where there are pine barrens. And the pine barrens happen to be a little place in New Jersey, a little place on Long Island, which is New York. And the pine barrens is, there are these unique, I call them, and I'm at a short loss for words here, because I'm never at a loss for words, but you've got the a wooded area of pines in these areas that are just right next to the ocean. And we are man's encroaching, growing up and going into the Pine Barrens with some of my friends who grew up near the Pine Barrens. And I would head down there. And as you would head down there, you'd see a little bit of man's intervention. Then all of a sudden going back to, you're seeing townhouses being built. One of the ponds, they called it Witch's Pond. I have no idea why, growing up. And now if you go to Witch's Pond, the Witch's Pond is this tiny little thing with complete homes built all around it. So the man's intervention is not a great one. But with the serotonous cones, it wasn't that I was just going off on a tangent somewhere. The pitch pines that are there, the pitch pines actually have serotonous cones as well. And, you know, think about this. It's supposed to, through lightning strikes, we're supposed to have natural fires. Fires, they occur. But because of man's intervention where we, you know, we have people who are a little whacked out there, seriously, who light forests on fire. But we simply have people that are at a campsite and they make their campfire too large, or they're making a campfire on a windy night, and all these different things. And you will be held financially responsible now if you are actually burning forests down for any untold reason. So that's something for you to understand out there too. So now, because telling you some stories, let's go to that climax community. And this is when a community has reached its final stage of succession. So you would actually see something going from one stage straight through, and you would see a meadow become a woodland, and a woodland, you know, so you could actually watch the swamp become the meadow, and the meadow, and most of them are hardwood forests, which are the climax communities. And I'll give you a simple little scenario here where you might have a pond, and the pond has some cattails now inside of it. You go, oh, cattails are pretty cool. Well, the cattails that are in there, that's telling you that it's going to succeed to become a marsh. And my friend Nancy's farm, you probably know her brother Nick Nolte, the actor, Nancy, my friend, on her farm, she had a lot of cattails in her pond. So one day she asked me, and I got a backhoe out, and I dug out some of the cattails that are inside there because didn't want to see it succeed. So sometimes, including me, man's intervention, you're preventing one of the stages to go to the next stage. Well, once you have a marsh in there and you get some plants called sedges, and I remember this because grasses and sedges, and you go, well, what's the difference? If you feel them, the saying for us botanists out there is sedges have edges, and you can actually feel that they have edges on there. So you know that the marsh now is changing from a marsh and going to be changing over to a meadow. Well, through time, and I mentioned this before, you're going meadow to a woodland, well, you're going to get some of the smaller birch trees in there, and I'll just use yellow birch. And the reason why I know yellow birch is growing up, if we wanted to make birch beer soda, what we would do is you'd go out and you'd cut off a couple of little stems from the yellow birch. You could use black birch as well. And they have a wintergreen taste to them. So if you've never done this, you take a little piece, put it in your mouth, and you've got this perfect wintergreen. So we would take a couple of them, strip them down, put them in some boiling water, add a little bit of sugar. No, it wasn't real birch beer, but it was our way of making birch beer on the farm. Just something a little simple and fun. So a woodland, and all of a sudden you're going to get start to see some of the oaks come in. You might get a red or a black oak. So you're going to get these oaks coming in, and now the climax community is that forest. Well, we can allow succession to occur, so you go from a primary succession somewhere in a pioneer community, eventually all the way up to a climax one, but we can also have man's intervention. And here's one of the ones that I think we need to do some great studies. With climate change, we are getting areas where some areas are getting so much snow, and with so much snow, we are now salting roads tremendously. Well, think about this. We have areas where there is fresh water, and we are raising the salinity. And are we going to make it seawater, saltwater? No, but we are raising the salinity. And are we going to get halophytes to come in, plants that are salt-loving, to out-compete? Because, hey, there's a competition. And in today, in my eco, I'm using more plants than I am animals. But there's a competition that goes on. Hey, and if I have something better to survive, I get to win. So that is one of man's interventions that I think that, you know, or man's interference, we've got to take a look at. You know, we have all those increased numbers of fires I alluded to. And if it happens to be, and I know this, out west we had one of the raging forest fires because some people, they lit their campfire and they did what they were supposed to do. And then they left to go owling, go out and call some owls in. So they left their fire unattended, and it burnt thousands upon thousands of acres, of which they are financially responsible. Think about this. For the reforesting, that means replanting, the firefighters come in. So we need to be careful. But that is man's intervention inside of that. You know, it goes back to man's intervention, me digging out the cattails. My local town pond that I grew up in, well, through weathering and erosion and deposition is when you're laying down the deposits of soil. Well, through time, you've got the stream coming in to this smaller pond, but it gets filled up with deposition, gets filled up with soil sediments. And if they didn't do anything through succession, this pond would then become a marsh. And since it's a local town, they want to keep the pond. And it really is a nice area, a little fountain in there. I grew up ice skating on this pond and all. Which next to no one want to go back there. Next to no one ice skates out anymore because, why would you ever go outside and play anymore? Anyway, that's another story for another day. But when you look at it, they will actually dredge it out, dig it out to maintain and keep it as a pond. You know, it's a local town. You want to have a little beauty feature, kids place for kids to get to go fishing and all that. So we need to, again, be aware that that is disrupting the ecological succession that is there. And then you get into places like, once again, growing up in the east over by the Meadowlands. Well, the Meadowlands was a marsh ecosystem. People always say it's a swamp. It's not a swamp. It's a marsh ecosystem. Well, hey, they've built stadiums and racetracks, and now they're built townhouses and malls and all this. Well, I think that's a big man's intervention. And you know what's crazy? Now watch this one. You buy a piece of property, and let's say it has some type of wetlands on it. And you say, all right, I want to build on this wetlands. Well, then you must, and typically with law, you use the word litigate, but with this, we call it mitigate. So you actually have to mitigate. Mitigate means this. You're going to tell your state that, okay, I'm going to build on this wetlands. We're going to fill it in, dry it out, so to speak. And I'm going to build on it, but they'll say, no, you need to rebuild. Like, say you're going to build on 2 acres of wetlands. They're saying, no, now you need to rebuild and pay for to mitigate 4 acres somewhere else. You go, okay, that's great. And because you're getting what you want and you're building some wetlands somewhere else, which is the greatest place for vast number of species, that biodiversity we look for, you know. So, but anytime they decide to build a racetrack or a stadium on wetlands, they don't mitigate. They tell you that this is the law, but they don't follow the law. So you think about man's intervention. They make you intervene, but they don't have to intervene. But I guess that's sort of what politics is. And again, that is also, I guess, time for another story on another day. So in my Eco 101, you know, I gave you a number of stories, hopefully to make it come alive. So as you're listening to it, you're saying, okay, I now understand about how succession will occur, how plants will move from one type to another, or one area will move from a pond to a marsh to a meadow and all of that. But as you're listening to this, look in your communities where you live. And I don't mean necessarily in a town, but as you get outside the towns, or you're going to your state park, your national forest, and I do suggest that you get out to them because they're great places to be and does not cost that much at all. Or take up a great hobby, a hiking hobby, a fishing hobby, a kayaking, whatever it is that will get you in the outdoors. But start to take a look and use what we learned here today. Put it in your own mind so that you can get out and you can enjoy nature as it was meant to be. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.
Joey B's outdoor adventure. Joey B's outdoor adventure. Joey B's outdoor adventure. Joey B's outdoor adventure.
That was awesome.